Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
Ay, 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 ay.
I'm going home. I'm droning through airspace, high above the world's oceans, and at some stage mañana, I'll be walking into the arrivals lounge. I open the brochure informing me what music channels I can access with my headset, what movies will be screening as the hours pass, and what meals I will be served. In designing the menu for your international flight, it says, our chefs had a regional potpourri of ingredients available to them, the abundance and freshness of Australia's famous seafood and farm produce, and the exotic herbs and spices that only Asia can provide. The most important ingredient in our cuisine is freshness. Fresh lean meats, chicken and fish, fresh vegetables and fruits, meticulously prepared to standards far beyond anything previously imaginable in flight. I flick through one of the glossy magazines they bring me. There's a whole new generation of unfamiliar celebrities beaming up at me from those pages. I'll have my work cut out for me learning to adore them all. The magazines even smell rich, impregnated with a chemical spiciness, somewhere between aftershave and gloss estopol. Joy, passion, obsession. It seems they're all perfumes now. The glossy catalogue slipped into the seat pocket alongside the sick bag spreads a cornucopia of items I never before realised I needed. Battery-operated revolving tie racks, fold-away walking machines in a handy zip-up leather-look carry bag, desk ornaments fashioned from my own business cards, head massagers, chronometers, barometers, portable heart rate calculators. The Australian customs officers look unbelievably casual in shorts and open-necked shirts, like they've been standing around having a barbecue outside and have just stepped inside to process these passengers. Somewhere out the back behind those doors, surely, is an outdoor setting painted mission brown and six beers in stubby holders and a plastic dish of coleslaw and a plate of charred snags. Their manner, as they look over our passports, is completely relaxed and unofficious. There's not a machine gun in sight. Beyond the checkout stand friends and family, a platoon of beaming people ecstatic to see us. The weekend passes in a daze of celebrating. In the CBD, everyone's wearing black as if they're grieving for something. People stand on the tram with CD headphones stuffed into their ears and dark sunglasses covering their eyes. They walk quickly, stiffly, clutching briefcases to their chests and huddling in doorways to speak into mobile phones. Something joyless and heavy is descending on me as I walk round the city I've missed. Something hard and cold. It's so clean and orderly, and yet so strangely empty. On the streets, with an afternoon of spare time stretching ahead of me, I feel the last emotion I expected, a swamping sense of lethargy, of numb pointlessness. There's nothing I can do without money. No human exchange available here which seems valid without it. No reason just to wander to see what surprising thing might be around the next corner. I already know. There will be shops staffed by polite attendants, streets full of cars, people shielded and invisible to each other, not making eye contact, busy going somewhere else. After a month or two, Phil can't stand it and goes camping in the bush for a month. I resolve to clean the house, pull my beloved books down from the attic and recreate the feel of home. When we left, we'd cleaned out our lives, we'd thought, reduced our belongings to the barest of essentials and stowed them upstairs. Now, pulling those same boxes down and checking their contents, I can't believe how much superfluous stuff we own. Why all these candlesticks, these jugs, these shoes? What's the sentiment that compels me to accumulate it? In the supermarket, I'm constantly greeted by old friends and acquaintances, delighted to run into me. Hey, you're back. You've been away, haven't you? South America, wasn't it? Mexico. Right, how was it? Well, God, like another universe, Fantastic. I can hardly... Good on you. How's it feel to be home? Well, to tell you the truth, it's sort of hard to adjust. It was really hard to leave after such a long time. Must be good, though, to be home safe and sound in good old Aussie land. They stare at me, already nodding, willing me, it seems, to answer yes, to confirm that it's a jungle out there, that I kiss the tarmac as I arrived, prostrate with gratitude and relief. They want to hear all about it, in fact, but they haven't got time right now. We must get together, they say, have a proper talk sometime. I stand nodding in the supermarket that contains no rich scents of fruit and vegetables, no checkerboard displays of beans and apples, no vendors cajoling you with tastes and samples, no forest of hanging piñatas swinging overhead, no kneeling old ladies spreading foraged mushrooms from a shawl, no meat section to send the health inspector screaming. They're still insistent, uncomfortable with my silence, wanting to wrap this in a 25-word soundbite with solid confirmation. So it's good to be home, eh? They press. I nod. Yep, just great, I say. Kenny was right. You've got to know when to hold 'em and know when to fold 'em. People seem torn between restlessness and listlessness as they catalogue all the things they'll be doing or purchasing next. Once we begin to talk about the present, I'm aware of a floundering absence in the conversation, which people fill with minutiae, details of shopping expeditions and price comparisons on consumer goods and plots on TV shows I've never heard of. I hear something else I honestly haven't heard for almost 3 years, whinging. I can't get over the unfamiliar pervading feeling of aggrieved discontent and thwarted entitlement, the sense that everything is inadequate and disappointing, the endless inventories of why they are not yet happy. Was it always like this? This is not how I remember my friends or my society. Everything seems weird that used to seem normal. They ask, weren't you scared for your safety in Mexico? How did you handle all that crime? As they alarm their cars and triple lock their doors, install laser security systems against home invasion, and bolt themselves inside every night with the TV on for company, a series of remote controls laid out on the coffee table in front of them. They relate to me. Everybody was shocked into coping when an explosion caused a gas shortage during our absence. They had to endure cold showers, they say, for days and days. No gas. Honestly, it was like a third world country. My hands flail, clench, brimming with useless gesture. I'm back to being without words again, inarticulate, lacking the right vocabulary. The word we learned in Mexico for being homesick was extrañar, to miss. It's a multi-layered verb, that one. An extranjero is a foreigner, a stranger. To find something extraño is to find it puzzling and strange. It can also mean to banish and to grow apart. To miss something is to become a stranger, to be banished, to be sick for home. The old church is locked and empty, I notice, but the new tabaret down the road is packed. I stand out in the garden at night and look at the stars. What should I do to stop feeling so tormented? Switch off my water and power? Gather wood to cook my food? Dig my own pit toilet in the backyard? Would I feel better if I did? Would it somehow assuage my nagging guilt if I felt I was living more like 80% of the world's inhabitants? The Southern Cross and the pointers lie stretched above me. Years ago, someone taught me how to find my way using the stars if I was ever lost and disoriented in the wilderness. But who are we kidding? When have any of us really ever been in those sorts of dire straits? We're too affluent to bother with such haphazard compasses. We'll phone up the rescue service on our mobile or just flag down a passing car or arm ourselves with state-of-the-art mapping devices. The wilderness doesn't scare us, kept at bay with perimeter lights and eco-tours and designated walkways. The land cruiser chock-full of provisions before we set foot into the great unknown. We put a concrete path in and advise walkers not to leave it, fence off the precipices, close off the risk areas due to public liability, reduce it all to a limited scale we can manage. And only occasionally, when we glance into a forest or into a sky, do we feel something almost forgotten, pull at us, reminding us It's a moment that makes us feel brittle and small and foolish, standing there with our maps and guidebooks in our $200 boots. The burden of our loot weighs us down, and that's not a comfortable feeling. We'd rather think of ourselves as living responsibly, touching the earth lightly, putting out the papers for recycling. We're comforted by a script we live by, in which we cast ourselves, in fact, as battlers, people without any special privileges, just getting by. And I'm back in that world now, with a few of the blind spots sanded off. Back where, rather than giving up some of our affluence or curbing our appetites, we talk about our lifestyle. We continue to chant the mantra that the market or the economy will find a solution. Who are we getting these defences ready for? Why are we already arming ourselves with these arguments, leaping to defend ourselves in the name of choice, as if choice was infinite and our entitlement an automatic given? I stare at the sky, imagining social breakdown under these rampaging pressures. I imagine us left behind a barricade with these theories and inventories, our labels and impact statements, clutching the arm of whoever will listen, bleating self-righteously about lifestyle. Outside that barricade of paper and junked, useless consumer goods and dead computers full of old data, we'll pile the garbage we have gone on putting out long after the system which used to come to remove it for us has collapsed. The poor people of the world, who've learned to survive on a wholly different set of choices and decisions, will be eyeing that mother of all garbage dumps in a completely different light. They will know how to purify water, how to scavenge food, how to truly adapt to their environment as we clutch our stomachs with cholera and wonder why the toilet won't flush and why someone won't come and tell us what to do next. Those street kids in Mexico City and Mumbai and Lagos, they'll be the ones with the living skills. When I left Mexico, so much of what I'd accumulated seemed like loot that I was only too happy to give away. I've kept a cup, though, that I bought once in a street market in Michoacán. It's earth-coloured with cobalt-blue designs around the rim. On the bottom, in blue handwriting, is printed its provenance. Familia Chichipan, Zinzunzan, Mich, Mex. Zinzunzan is the town, a name derived from the local Purépecha word, so onomatopoeic and vivid for hummingbirds. Chichipan, an indigenous name, not Spanish. The hummingbird was a sacred animal to these people. They believe warriors were reincarnated as these small iridescent birds and that they pull the chariot of the sun across the sky each day, pulling it up out of the kingdom of darkness. In the landscape around the town of Zinzunzan, there are still hummingbirds. The sun goes on rising out of the dark horizon. The Purépecha people still make beautiful pots and cups, inscribed with the same ancient designs, and someone from the Chichipan family made me this one. I sit holding it now, considering the worldview that lets you put your name and address on every beautiful thing you make, that guides your hand to be so open, that faith in a good world. It comforts me, this cup, more than any other material thing I still possess from Mexico. I feel some invisible but vibrant current of energy flowing through it, connecting me still with its maker, a faint humming, living tug. If you can't bring yourself to believe me, let's try something out. You can equip yourself with a backpack global positioning system fed by 24 orbiting satellites, a cyber atlas stored in your Palm Pilot and all the cash you feel you need. I'll carry this cup, signed with its maker's name like a homing device. Let's leave our shoes behind and walk, dreaming of what we might become and the welcome we might hope for, the hands that might brush our own. I'll speak in the new language that I've begun to learn, of believing this cup will be filled for me when I hunger and thirst, if I can only carry it with enough humility and trust, if I can only give away everything that I am given. Let's both start walking, knowing there will be no path into this new world, each with our own navigational aids. And let's see who finds their way home first.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National. on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.